This is the Marketing Podcast Network.
Welcome to Uncorking a Story, the podcast that introduces you to the rich world of storytellers who share their personal journeys, creative processes, and the stories behind their stories, one conversation at a time. I'm your host, Mike Carlin, and I'm thrilled to be part of your writing journey. If you're an aspiring writer, a literary enthusiast, or simply someone who believes in the transformative power of words, you've come to the right place. Every week, we'll pop the cork on the world of successful storytellers and give you a healthy pour of inspiration, insight, and empowerment. My mission is to help writers like you realize your full potential through the transformative and therapeutic power of writing. Whether you're just starting your literary voyage or looking to refine your craft, I'm here to provide you with the knowledge, inspiration, and encouragement you need to embark on your own storytelling adventure. So, are you ready to uncork your story and let your creativity flow? Uncorking a Story is about to begin. Sit back, relax, and let the transformative magic of storytelling whisk you away. Welcome to Uncorking a Story. Glenn Heilman is the CEO of Highmark School Development and has spent over 15 years living in Bountiful, Utah. His love of Grand Lake, Colorado led him to purchasing his parents' home in 2020. His family is actively working to restore the property from the devastation of the East Troublesome Fire. In doing so, they hope to honor the legacy of his parents. He joins me today on Uncorking a Story to talk about his memoir, A Yellow House in the Mountains. Welcome to Uncorking a Story, Glenn.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Nice to have you here, Glenn. And I'm curious, where does your story as an author begin?
Well, it starts almost immediately after the fire. October 21st of 2020, I received a phone call that evening from my parents. It's about 9:30 at night, and they let me know that there was a fire at the property, a property that we had acquired previously and my parents were living in. And it was an interesting conversation. My parents were very calm, collected, and they just wanted me to call them, there's my siblings, because they had lost power and they were going to go take shelter in the basement, feeling like they'd be safer there. So I did that. 15 minutes later, called back, no answer, and would learn later, a couple days later, that the fire had consumed the entire property, the home, and including the loss of my parents. So that devastation occurred early on, and certainly before I was ever considering to be a writer. Anyway, we had a number of services that occurred over the weeks that would follow. And during the course of those services, I heard a lot of stories, some that made me laugh, some that made me cry, but many that I had never heard before from my siblings or my parents' siblings. And I was captivated by them. So I came home and would record them. And just in short story form, I wanted to capture those stories for my own posterity. And my wife actually had the suggestion over the Christmas holiday that I ought to weave them together in more of a narrative form so that our children would more easily be able to read these stories. It would help them to remember their grandparents. So that was really how it began.
Wow. So as a written, I don't want to say testimonial, but just sort of, you know, really just to help teach the kids and other people in the family about your parents. I'm so sorry about hearing about the loss of your parents in such a horrific way. It's probably not even the right adjective for it, but man, I can only imagine what was going through your head first when you got that phone call from them. And then of course, when you learned what their fate was, that's
a shock to the system. But, you know, interestingly through that process, I found writing almost an unbelievably incredible way to deal with the grief. It was a way to channel my energy in a really productive way that ultimately led to this book that I've written. And it was therapeutic. It was really helpful for me in many ways. The other thing I ought to add is that while it was tragic and it was horrible, remember 2020 was the year of COVID. And my dad was 86, my mom was 84. Neither of them feared death. They knew that they were later in life, but they absolutely were terrified of losing one another, right? So neither of them wanted to go first. Or rather lose one before the other. So it was in many regards a blessing in that they were together and, you know, their fate was shared. They were married 68 years. They lived wonderful, beautiful lives. And they went in a way that some couples, I think, are envious of.
You know, I'm thinking about my own parents right now who are 91 and 90. And I think this year is 67 or 68 years of marriage for them.
Hold on.
And you know, they might, my dad, you know, knock on wood, at 91, he's still good. You know, he's still got all the marbles, and physically he's good, still drives. They live independently. My mother, you know, deals with some memory issues, let's say, has no short-term memory, but I can't imagine like life with one of them missing, you know, and you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the movie, the book, The Notebook. It's like, that's how I envision them departing us, is like within minutes of each other, you know?
Yeah. Well, in our case, my parents actually got their wish. Not that either of them wanted to die. Honestly, they loved life and they were healthy. They were fit, but COVID was definitely a worry at the time. There was very little known about it. They lived up in the mountains. And so I think they felt somewhat insulated from, you know, the virus and the spread, but nonetheless, they were worried about it. They would hear about it, but they were in great health and they were enjoying a season of life that was just magical for them. Interesting. One of the other things, we were with my parents 3 weeks before the fire, and my mom had shared with me that they had never had a better summer in their entire lives, primarily because everyone's vacation plans had been canceled. Well, the one place all of our family could go was to Grand Lake. We could always go to the mountains. And so we did. My siblings all went, our family went several times. My mom's aunt or brothers and sisters came and spent time with them. It was a revolving door of people that they knew and loved that came to visit. And they just had a glorious summer and a season that was in the midst of COVID for them, a wonderful time together. And then 3 weeks later, the fire arrived at their doorstep and it was kind of the close to that chapter. But, you know, again, all of us have to go through that. We're all going to face that at some point. But no one wants to leave the other loved one behind, right? So
yeah,
in our case, it was an option.
So what was your relationship with writing before all this happened? I mean, were you a hobbyist at all? I mean, did you consider yourself a writer, or was this really the first like big thing you ever took on in the written form?
I had never written before. Other than, I will tell you that the day before the memorial service, so 6 days after the fire, 7 days after the fire, after 7 days of planning and trying to make arrangements, I had a brief moment of pause. And during that moment of pause, I decided I had to get out of my office because I was getting a little weepy and the emotion was really hitting. So I went out to mow the lawn. While I was out mowing the lawn, I had this little tune that was going through my head. And, you know, we talked about your guitar in the background there. I came in from mowing the lawn. I grabbed my guitar and I figured out the chord progression. And then I went outside and I was humming that tune. And literally in the time it took to mow the lawn, less than an hour, I had formulated some words to go along with that, that basically told the story of my parents' lives in a 4 or 5 minute song. So that was kind of the start to my creative process. I didn't know I had creativity. I'd never written songs or music or books for that matter, but I really felt inspired to capture that song. Once I had that, that got me more engaged. I mentioned I'd started writing some short stories after the memorial service, and I found that I really enjoyed doing it. And so I had collected pages and pages of these short stories, and I had weaved them together, and I kind of just held them there. I had them printed out in a binder that I shared with my siblings. And as we got 6 months down the road, it was June of 2021, I was on a call with a consultant who worked for us, and he was lost up in Canada somewhere and couldn't get out because of the COVID situation. He had to quarantine for 2 weeks. And I asked him what he was going to do to avoid boredom. And he said he wasn't worried about being bored, that his wife's executive producer had hired him to go find some new material. And I asked him what he was looking for. And he said, well, we're looking for some wholesome, good stories. I said, I got a whole bunch of these great stories. And he goes, don't do anything with it. Send it to me. Let me look at it. And literally 2 weeks later, they had reached out to me and said, hey, we want to convert these short stories into a full feature film. And so we signed a contract. Everything was on track to do that. And they asked me not to write a book. So that was not part of the marketing plan. They wanted to get the movie done. Well, last year in June, the strike happened, the writer's strike and then the actor's strike. And it put everything in the movie business on hold. And so with that having paused, they called me and said, hey, you know what? We don't know how long this is going to last. Now would be a good time for you to go back to writing. And so last year in June, I picked up the pieces from a year earlier and just started really taking a serious look at it. And I discovered Readzy, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners have probably engaged with before, but I was looking for help. I didn't know how to write a book. I didn't know structurally, what would make an entertaining book. So the first thing I did is I hired a content editor, and I shared with her some of these collections that I had. And she gave me some really valuable advice, and I employed that. Then I hired a real editor to go through my work, and they edited it and made some phenomenal recommendations and changes. And then with that, I hired a Readsy designer to help me with the cover and the layout and the format of the book. And the rest is history. You know, within 4 months, it went from being a manuscript of short stories to what you see in the printed form today. And I learned a ton along the way. I've learned so much about it that it really has kindled a spark in me to want to write again. But I still have a full-time job, right? This is not my profession. So at some point, though, I do look forward to writing more.
I love how this, like, it all starts with a song almost, you know, kind of going, you know, you're outside, you're working in the yard, you know, you get this, you know, melody in your head, chord progression, the words come after. And then from there, it blossoms into, you know, short stories. And now, of course, manuscript and book. It's like a gift from the universe almost. Like, you're just kind of going out and minding your own business. You have zero intent to do this. And yet all of a sudden, this gift is kind of given to you. It like comes into your subconscious, and you know, good for you for following your curiosity and getting it all down.
That was my experience. It was beyond me. I don't know where it came from, but it was definitely sourced from somewhere. And fortunately, I acted on it, and it led to something beautiful.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Did you find yourself like time slipping when you were writing? I'm just curious. Like, did you get into, you know, some authors call it like getting into a state of flow or hitting flow, where like time stands still, pardon the Rush reference, and then you kind of, you just kind of, the words are coming out, and then you go and reread them and not even realize that you wrote them. Did that happen to you at all by any chance?
Not like you outlined it there, but I had some interesting experiences. Honestly, the words came pretty easily. The pauses would occur when I'd be writing something and I'd get curious, why in the world would my mom or dad have done this or that? I'll give you one example. I was trying to capture some memories from when my mom and dad were in high school, and my dad at the age of 18 enlisted in the Marine Reserves. And he never talked about it. We never discussed it as family, but I was really curious, why in the world, here he is 18 years old, just graduated from high school. My mother is 16 years old and pregnant. Why in the world would he enlist in the reserves? It made no sense to me. So I went online and I Googled that. And I spent a couple of hours, maybe more, understanding what was going on in 1952. The president of the United States at that time issued an alternative to a 6-year draft. The Korean War was in full force. And rather than being drafted for 6 years, they introduced this program and said, if you'll enter the reserves, you may or may not be deployed, but you'll have a weekend assignment. You stay home. You do your basic training, stay home. And in a 2-year commitment, then you've satisfied the nation's requirement. And when I saw it and read it in that context, it made perfect sense. Absolutely, he doesn't want to go to Korea for 6 years. He's not going to roll those dice. However, enlisting in the Marines for 2 years, he had brothers that both served in the military. I think he saw that as a way to control, as best he could control, the circumstances, you know, being a recently married young man with a child on the way.
Did you feel in a way that you were, you know, even though your parents had passed, you were getting closer to them as a result of kind of writing this and asking those questions, following your curiosity into those places?
Absolutely. I can tell you, I know my parents better now, 2 years into this process, than I ever knew them growing up. And part of that is to do the real work of writing this last summer. I had to reach out to my siblings. I knew stories, but I didn't know some of the detail. And I really wanted to portray it as accurately as I could. And I needed to inquire as to others in our family to ensure that I wasn't, you know, miscalculating or miswriting or representing what did or didn't happen.
What did they think, or what did they say to you when you told them that you were taking this project on?
You know, I started by just sharing it with them. I took the collection of all the stories I had heard, most of them from them, and I shared them with them during my parents' anniversary, which was on June 26th. So part of the 6 months after the fire, I spent getting this short story collection assembled, and I shared it with them at that event. And they all were appreciative. They loved the idea that they had had a hand in telling a story and that somebody had taken the time to record it. So there was just a great sense of satisfaction. From that point forward, though, I think nobody really thought much more of it until last summer when it became clear I was really going to do something with this and make it more broadly available. I just felt in writing the story that while my parents were very ordinary, that they had experiences in life that I think others can learn from. And they accomplished some extraordinary things together. You probably saw the subtitle of the story is a story of love and refinement. And really the story is not just about my parents. It's about my dad transforming his entire life. He was a knucklehead. He was a rough teenage kid, but that's not the guy that most people knew. Most people knew my dad as this 80 plus year old man that was sweet and kind and loving and was dedicated to his family. Nobody can believe some of the stuff that he had done as a young man. And I felt like that was an important story to share that, you know, we all have our flaws and we all have things that some of us might prefer to keep in the closet. But the reality is we all have challenges in life. And I think the way that my dad dealt with his, with the support of my mom, it was meaningful in that after 86 years on this earth, he was a different person. And I loved that refining process that he went through.
Well, it also gives you a lot of room for character development. And if you're thinking about it from a literary context, you know, the guy on page one is not the guy on page, you know, whatever the last page of the book is.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. This being kind of your first book, what did you find most challenging about writing it?
You know, I think the most challenging process for me wasn't the gathering of the stories or even the capturing them on the page. It was more the editing of it. I initially started to go on the cheap, and I felt like with friends and family, and I've got some friends that are really well-read English majors in college. I sent it out to five or six of my closest allies who I knew would do a great job editing, and they did. I was blown away after having it professionally edited, how many mistakes there still were. You know, little spaces in the page, misspelled words, misused words. And I would have thought after having so many people having read it that it would have been ready for publication. Wasn't even close. It was close, but there was a lot of refining that needed to be done. And I think I underestimated as a writer the value of what an editor really can do, because the book is what it is today as a result of those who took the time to really see things that the normal eye doesn't see or capture.
You know, I think friends and family are really good at giving you some good big picture feedback, some critical feedback. But when you bring in, you know, professional editor who doesn't know much about you at all, if anything, they're going to find the things that no one else is going to find. And they're going to really, and if you think about your relationship with them beyond just somebody who's helping me find mistakes and broaden it to somebody who is, you know, a real expert in crafting a story and really like optimized, and this is a boring business term, optimizing a story, but really to like optimize the story and structure it in a way that, you know, it's a reader will find valuable. You know, thinking about your editor as a true collaborator is, you know, it's something I always advise because, yeah, you know.
It was two editors, right? I had a content editor initially and then the editor, and they both did completely different things, which helped to ultimately arrive at the product we have today.
Yeah. What did you learn about yourself going through this process? I know you mentioned that it was very therapeutic, but what any big insights into yourself after having gone through this?
Well, I've always been a little bit, when I start something, I can't stop until it's done. And I think the thing I learned about myself is that the work of writing is not something you can do in a weekend or even a month or a year. In my case, it was 2.5 years. And that goes against the grain of my personality. I wanted it done. You know, I captured all these stories. Okay, now it's done. And I got a content editor, reorganized it. Now it's done. No. Then I had to bring an editor. Now it's done. No, you got to get a cover and a design and layout. And it takes time and effort. If you're going to do it right, which I've always been insistent, no matter what I do, I want to do it right. It takes time. There's no way to shortcut it or rush it. Or at least my experience was that there was no shortcut to doing it right. And you have to be willing to lean on those who have more expertise than you might in order to get your best work out there.
And how do you feel it changed you personally?
You know, it's reinforced more than changed, but just reinforced the passion and the love I have for my family. And that includes my siblings, my parents, but even my children, my wife and extended family. This has reminded all of us of how important stories can be to helping us. We all are going through challenges. You know, I mentioned my mom got pregnant when she was 15, had a baby when she was 16. Those experiences still happen today, and those are things that we can learn from. And I think if nothing else, writing is one way that we can share human experiences that we all have in the benefit of helping others that are facing similar challenges. So I learned from myself. I enjoy that. I've had people reach out to me that said, man, I wish I would have met your dad when he was younger. I can relate to this guy. I only knew him for, you know, the last 30 years of his life. But wow, if he had told me this, boy, could I have shared some stories with him, right? It's like, I think we all have so much more in common than what we typically will acknowledge or recognize unless we go into the depths of conversation. And I think the human experience is all about sharing. And I think I've learned that I love doing that. I love being able to connect people through these stories in the benefit of learning and hopefully maybe even changing behavior, maybe changing the decisions we make as a result of seeing how other people may have handled something.
So that even kind of diverts from your original intent, right? If the original intent is, hey, I want to capture and memorialize and be a testament to my parents' life and their love for each other, and you want to remind your own children, their grandchildren about this. Now it's kind of broadening out to, hey, I want to help other people through this. You know, there's that positive intent that underlies it, which is can be very, very motivating. And I think when you write from that place of having positive intent, you know, versus something that might be selfish, it definitely shows up on the page, and readers, I believe readers appreciate it.
Well, I found it really thrilling. That's what kind of motivated me to want to do another one or two or three down the road, but I need to retire first.
That's right. Do you have any ideas of what the next one might be?
You know, I actually do. I've got a couple of ideas, one of which is the follow-up to this story. After the fire, because we own the property, my wife and I have spent 3 years recovering. And I don't know if you've ever been on site after a fire, but it's complete and utter devastation. Some of the assumptions we had made, we knew we were in a forest and there's always a risk of fire. But I had no idea how damaging and how powerful fire can be. Just to illustrate, that fire moved 26 miles in under 3 hours. They estimate the winds were blowing anywhere between 80 and 120 miles an hour, and there was lots of fuel. So it was just a massive storm. And what we found and were left with was nothing. There was nothing left. Like, we couldn't find anything. My dad was a collector of guns. He had machine guns. He had rifles. He had shotguns. We couldn't find a single barrel. And we went through everything carefully, not even a barrel. Everything was gone. They said it burned at 1,700 degrees for 3 or 4 days. So it was devastating. But the real story for us has been, and the next book might be about, what have I learned in the recovery process? What have I learned in terms of restoration? And what are the things that we've learned that might help others who are facing similar devastation? And how do they navigate it? And I think, you know, you ask questions about what have I gained emotionally from it? And how did it help me with my grief? I think there's a story to be told there. I think there's more to my story and experiences post-fire, where this dealt more on my parents' lives leading up to the fire. The next book I think I'll write would be something around the elements of recovery and what's involved in that. And then I've got some interesting business experiences I've always wanted to write more of a business book on, but that's further down the road. I'm still learning there.
I don't think you have a choice. You have to write that second book. You know, you have to. I don't think you're going to get off the hook that easy. I think we need the second book.
Well, in the meantime, I'm sharing the process on our website. So if any of your listeners are interested, they can go to the website. There's the song I mentioned earlier. We put it together with the slideshow. But there's also some videos that show some of the work of recovery. And I mean, imagine we had to replant the seed. We had to take out 18 inches of ash just so we could put in new soil on 43 acres. That was no small task. And then we had to overseed and plant and had to figure out the water recovery. We had to get water and restore that. We had to get roads put in, and you know, everything was gone. It completely took everything out. So it's been a long and laborious process, but there's been some great things that I want to make sure I've captured and recorded. So how to put it into an enjoyable form to read is going to be the magic.
That's right. Therein lies the challenge, but I have the sense that you're up for that challenge.
I am.
And, you know, with your permission, I'd love to include that song at the end of this episode so people can hear it.
Just please let your listeners know I am not a singer, nor am I a songwriter, but I've written a song and I sing on it. But that was recorded 8 days after the fire. So you'll probably hear a little emotion. I'm not a great singer anyway. And then on top of that, the emotion of trying to capture that song, that is the original recording that's online.
Well, I think the fine listeners of Uncorking a Story will give you a pass if you're a little off key, but I'm curious about your path to publication. I know that there was, you know, the film, you know, movie was going to be made, or a film was going to be made about this. And then there was a pivot there because of the strike. How did you wind up going about getting it published?
So the guy who did the design of the cover and the book had recommended I look into Ingram Spark. I understand. I think they're the largest. I'm not certain of that, but I know they're a very large publication group that works with Amazon, Barnes and Noble, everyone else. And so he had some good experience with other clients. And so he recommended that I look into it. And what I found is it was a one-stop shop, right? So it basically gave me everything I needed to very quickly take the written work that had been completed, upload the files, and then they really assist dramatically in helping get it distributed.
Yeah. So now you can add an independent publisher to your list of accomplishments.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
and you know, just having run a small business and published independently myself, you know, you really have to think about it as being a small business.
There's no money in it. At least there hasn't been yet. So I don't think I'll ever recover from the investment I've made, but this was never about making money. This was all about sharing the message, sharing the stories, and uplifting people. Not to suggest that writers can't. I'm sure there are many examples of those who have made money, but what I found is to do it right, you know, you're writing checks to these individuals who are doing really good work. And it's not cheap, and it adds up pretty quickly. And even the distribution, by the time, you know, you put it on Amazon, the discounts that are required to get them to want to promote your book, you know, if you make a buck or two a book, you consider yourself lucky.
that true words have never been spoken.
It's not about the money. For me, it was about the process of writing and capturing something that I think will pay off in ways far more valuable than cash.
Yeah. I mean, you're touching lives and you're impacting lives, and it's hard to put a price on that. Definitely. So I always like to get to know my guests a little bit better by asking a couple of pop culture questions. And we're at the point of the conversation where I tend to do that. So I'm curious, Glenn, when you were younger, what were some of the things that you liked to watch on TV? Do you have any favorite TV shows from your childhood?
I had some standbys: Gilligan's Island, Hogan's Heroes, and McHale's Navy. You know, those are my three favorites. That dates myself, but love those three shows.
Not a bad answer. I am curious your take on Gilligan's Island. You know, they were on the island for I don't know how many seasons Gilligan's Island was. I think it was three or four, maybe. Professor builds a radio out of coconuts, but can't fix a hole in a boat. So I'm just curious as to if you ever really went down that rabbit hole of thought around Gilligan.
I was torn with the dilemma of which of the two actresses were the most attractive. So I never got to the logic of trying to figure out how to fix a boat.
And did you come to the conclusion that it was Marianne?
It was for me.
I was Camp Marianne myself.
Yeah.
You know, and then Hogan's Heroes. That's another show that I mean, I thought was hysterical. I actually had Bob Crane's biographer on this show. Fascinating life. You know, wow. I know we learned a lot about how he passed away and how he died, but his actual life is quite interesting. But that's one of those shows where I don't know that it would like fly today. Like, I don't think that pitch meeting would go well in today's day and age. But actually, did you watch by any chance the series on Paramount called The Offer? It's about the making of The Godfather.
I did not.
They actually reenact the pitch meeting for Hogan's Heroes in there, because the guy who produced The Godfather also was the creator and showrunner for Hogan's Heroes. That's it. You know, if you do have a spare 8 to 10 hours, it's a fantastic series on Paramount.
Well, you know, for me, it did spark an interest in history, though. So even though it was a comedy and it was, you know, this little sitcom thing, I was anxious. I finally had a chance to go back to Europe and see some of those sites, and it did spark a little bit of curiosity and interest that later in life I was able to satisfy.
There you go. And I know we were talking music before, but growing up, what did you like listening to? What kind of music were you into?
I'm a huge Dan Fogelberg and James Taylor fan. So acoustic guitarists, you know, songwriters that used the acoustic guitar as their bass were the ones I was most eager to gravitate towards.
Oh, I love James Taylor. My wife and I differ on this. She was not a James Taylor fan.
No.
I don't get it. We're still married. She also doesn't like Jimmy Buffett, and I was a huge Parrot head. So
I was into the hard rock and roll, and he and I used to clash. I would be out there trying to get mellow with my acoustic guitar, and he was out there pounding the drums and rock and rolling. So we definitely had a clash within the Heilman household.
There you go.
Fogelberg. Growing up in Denver, that's where I grew up. He was from, you know, that area and had a studio in the Netherlands. So just a beautiful, beautiful artist. He did. And I later in life, I had the chance to go to dinner with he and his wife. So shortly before he died, actually, it was a highlight for me.
No kidding. That's great. That's great. And then, you know, if you could pass some words of advice to an aspiring author, what would you tell them?
Listen to the promptings that you receive. For me, the book was up here before it was in the printed page, and it came through inspiration. I don't know what the force is out there, but I do believe, and I've heard it from others, that if you're open to it, that inspiration will come and flow, and then don't put it off. Take notes. There were times I literally would wake up in the middle of the night and write things down as they occurred to me because I didn't want to lose them. So I just think there's a window in which inspiration on any subject that you're going to write about is going to provide opportunities for you to tap into that and record it as quickly as you can so as not to lose it.
Yeah, that was great advice. And if you could go back in time and give the younger Glenn some advice, what would you tell your younger self?
Wow. What would I tell myself? That's a good question. I don't know that I have a great answer for it, but probably just to keep smiling, keep working hard, hard work, and a good attitude can overcome a lot of adversity.
There you go. Excellent, excellent advice. Well, Glenn, this has been a very enjoyable conversation. Where can people learn more about you and the work that you're doing? I know you mentioned a website before. Do you have an address to share?
Yeah, it's Yellow House in the Mountains. The book is A Yellow House in the Mountains, but the website is yellowhouseinthemountains.com. And there's quite a bit of information there with respect to the story, some follow-up pieces, and we're going to continue to add content as it becomes available. So that's the best source to get information on the book. As far as getting to know me better, there's a little bit of a profile and bio in there, but I'm just an average Joe living in Utah, living the dream. Getting ready to restore a property that will be our retirement home. I think what I would share is that we saw what my parents had done in retirement. It became a magnet for our family. Literally, they built the house, they managed the property, and all their kids and grandkids flocked to it. That's what my wife and I had decided we wanted to replicate. So in the years ahead, we hope to have a house completed, property restored, sufficient that our kids and grandkids, friends and family are going to want to come and hang out for a while. And that's what we're working towards.
Well, that's a beautiful dream. And I thank you for sharing it with me. And I thank you for stopping by Uncorking a Story and letting me uncork yours.
It's been awesome.
Thanks for listening to Uncorking a Story. If you'd like more information about today's guest or to find out more about Mike, go to uncorkingastory.com. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Tune in every week to hear Mike Carlin uncork a new story.